The CMO Confidential Podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com.
Welcome to CMO Confidential, the podcast that takes you inside the drama, decisions, and choices that go with being the head of marketing. Hosted by five-time CMO Mike Linton.
Welcome, marketers, advertisers, and those who love them, to Chief Marketing Officer Confidential. CMO Confidential is a program that takes you inside the drama, the decisions, and the politics that go with being the head of marketing at any company in what is one of the most scrutinized jobs in the executive suite. I'm Mike Linton, the former CMO of Best Buy, eBay, Farmers Insurance, and Ancestry.com, here today with my guest, DJ Patel. Today's topic, is AI like taking the red pill or the blue pill? Now, DJ held leadership analytics positions at eBay and LinkedIn, and served as the chief data scientist for the United States of America. He's a senior fellow at Harvard and also an advisor and investor. Full disclosure, we worked together at eBay where DJ was, in Star Trekian terms, the Spock on the bridge. This is his second time on the show, and today we are using the Matrix reference to update our listeners on the topic that just keeps on going and going: artificial intelligence. Welcome, DJ.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be back.
Great to have you.
Importantly, an excuse to hang out.
Yeah, there we go. We like it. So, okay, first question. Now, DJ, where are we really in AI adoption? I mean, the market is valuing NVIDIA at $2 trillion with a T. Every company is saying they have AI, which we know we don't believe. And AI is coming for everybody's job. It's going to revitalize everything, and it's going to destroy the world all at the same time. Give us a take. What's really going on?
Yeah. So I think first, to put this in context, you know, AI has been going on for a long time in various forms. And so this is the latest form of AI. You know, we saw the early days of people trying to just make computers come up with rule sets, ways to kind of come up with insights. We realize, we need a lot of data, we need a lot of compute. Then we were able to kind of go into this phase of machine learning. This is really where Mike, you and I were really started to get to, yeah, to work on these problems together, was like, hey, why can't I target better on the marketing side? Why can't I figure out and have these systems adapt to fraudsters that are trying to take advantage of your systems? How do we get the data, the compute, all that stuff to work together? And then we moved to this major breakthrough that happened because we started to get the large data sets, the most notable being what was called ImageNet, which is this giant catalog of cat photos, effectively, plus. And people were able to say, whoa, we can train this to come up with new insights around computer vision, other type things. This is a bunch of Fei-Fei Li's work, other people. And that first systems were what's called deep learning. That was Jeffrey Hinton out of Toronto, that his students.
And you did say cat photos, did you not?
But it was. It was like,
yeah, I get it. I just want to make sure everyone heard that right.
Exactly. It was like a lot of that. And then we've seen this latest breakthrough, which is around what people refer to as generative AI. And this is using these new technologies referred to as transformers and other similar techniques to really create these breakthroughs. The surprising thing, and the most exciting thing about this, is that when you give this new form of AI instructions, or what we refer to as prompts, we, yeah, get back really powerful, creative, almost like eerie at times, like, wow, that was weird. And that could be everything from trying to create a new cat photo on one of these image type systems that are using something called diffusion models, or they might be using large language models to kind of create some type of poetry or some other type of summarization of work. So we're seeing a ton of this that's taking place. And what's been really exciting is we have never in humanity's time period seen this amount of energy, the raw calories of people working on one lane of technology has never occurred. And so because of that, what you should expect is massive breakthroughs that are going to continue in this area. But as I'm sure we're going to get into, there's plenty of hype in here as well.
Yeah, a lot of hype. So, and I appreciate that explanation, especially, you know, now everyone knows a lot more about AI and cats than before they started listening to the show. So let's talk about the next few years. How's this going to play out? Like, can these valuations actually be real, or is this too much hype? And when does this actually translate into true sales and profits? Mm-hmm. Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, so there's a few ways to think about this. The first is, I think the useful thing is to ask, where is AI applicable today? Like, where can you use it today? Where are the limits of it? And so some of the things that it is excellent at doing is summarization. I can take a whole lot of articles, I can take a whole lot of different things, and I can say, explain this to me. Explain it to me like I'm a 5-year-old. Explain it to me like I'm a 13-year-old. Explain it to me if, you know, pick up your favorite criteria here.
Yeah.
That is awesome. If you want to write a letter of recommendation or a rejection letter and you just say, hey, look, here's the bullet points. Write me an explanation or give me that recommendation letter or rejection letter. It's going to crush that. It does superbly well. Where it starts to really go off the rails is asking it things where you don't fully know what's going on. And this is what's often referred to as hallucinations or other type of issues that start to show up. And so suddenly it's like, it's making things up. You know, the famous examples being, people have been using it to write legal briefs, and then it makes up a whole bunch of
cases. I love that it makes up cases.
Like, what you have to remember,
cases were written by cats.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, the way to think about this technology is it takes this huge amount of data, and then it kind of stumbles forward. Like, if you've ever kind of like caught your toe on like a tree branch or stubbed it on something, and then you kind of stumble and try to recover. Think of AI like that. It's sort of stumbling forward statistically. It's like next word. And so if it's going on in the wrong direction, or it doesn't know how to look at things holistically, it looks at things very narrow.
So this is interesting. We had Tom Goodwin on the show, who's a futurist, and he called the current state of AI the equivalent of having 1 million cocky 16-year-old interns working for you, helpful, but not really responsible enough to be trusted. We've seen the whole Gemini thing. We've seen the Air Canada promotion that was just so wrong. Tell us about that statement about it's not responsible enough to be trusted, and then some of the mistakes we've seen here on both Gemini and Air Canada.
So there's a couple dimensions on this, because like one of the things that is there, Eric Brynjolfsson, who's an economist at Stanford, has actually shown this also in call centers, that if you take brand new people to the call center and then you give them an AI assistant, and it, so that's kind of like a co-pilot-esque situation, their performance jumps radically.
Because they are learning and being trained at speed. At their own pace too, because it's personalized.
It's personalized, and guardrails also. So it's going to prevent you from doing stupid stuff also. If you take the most seasoned workers, what it does is it allows them to be more efficient. It gives them a bunch of macros, if you will, to be faster at doing things. So there is a performance lift there, but not as much. And Klarna just released this result about how much they were able to save. I don't remember the exact numbers.
And Klarna is a pay over time company, right?
Exactly. Yes. It's like you get to distribute your payment structure kind of over a period of time. But what they were able to do in their call center is they're saving extraordinary amounts of time, because people are, they're able to assist people by getting to the right information. So we are seeing very real material things, not just
but, those are all repeatable, structured answers versus any blue sky answer, because what you have is you have massive databases there where you also have only so many paths and only so many answers, which would also follow the 1 million cocky 16-year-old interns. They can figure that out. Is that right or not?
Well, so here's the way I would think about it.
Yeah.
The systems, like places where you have stupid, boring, repeatable problems.
Yeah.
Like where it's just like you're answering something over and over again. It's like, you know, the equivalent of like you go into a conference center, you're like, where's the bathrooms? Like those type of problems are really done well. Think of like where one person takes a piece of paper, hands it to another person, and they just sort of form fill it out, and the forms are just in different spots. It's going to do really well there. Where it doesn't do well is, you know, creative assignments right now. Like where you're like, hey, give me something brand new, novel. Like literally create something with narrative. That it doesn't do well at the moment. Now, there is a view and what people call sparks of, you know, generalized artificial intelligence is that it does give sometimes really spectacular, surprising results. And so that those things, those insights that come out of this are some of those. So as an example, Reid Hoffman wrote a book called Impromptu, jointly with ChatGPT. And it was like, hey, write these things. So you can imagine, like I did this experiment where I said, I took something very complicated and I said, let me pretend I'm gonna write an essay or a memo to the president. I gave it a prompt saying, I need to write a 3-page memo for the president explaining healthcare policy in the United States. Explain an issue that is 20% of GDP.
Yeah.
And so it gave me this answer, and what I was like, oh, this is an interesting starting point. It's missing this and this and this and this. And here's the key thing. Most of the time, we have been trained to think of the world like a query, like Google. If we don't like it, we erase it, and then we start over. In these systems, I say, hey, you forgot about this, and you forgot about this, and you emphasized this too much. Go back and try again. And so it does it again. What it's done now is,
and it doesn't even have any hurt feelings when you tell it.
Doesn't have any hurt feelings.
Yeah.
If anything, it's like it's not grumpy, and it's like I gotta work late. like there's no pizza in the office. Instead, what it does now is it allows me to not be creator. It allows me to shift to editor. And so that is one of the most powerful things, especially around marketing, and what we see also on the image creation. Is we're able to shift modalities to say, look, we're not going to be precise. We're not going to nail it. But if you start, I'm not going to be dealing with a blank page. I've got some stuff there and now I can iterate.
And then, but how about like Gemini and then the Air Canada thing, the two massive public mistakes. What happened there?
Well, so this is the part, like what's in the data? These are the natural results that are in there. What people are trying to do to prevent these things is there's two things that they're really trying to do right now. One is this thing of how do we, what's called alignment. How do we align the model with our values? And the other is something that's referred to as some people will call it RAG, which is this basically a way as RAG architecture, which says, hey, I have a bunch of the content already. I'm going to go look internally for those documents and service those. So think of it as a combination of AI plus search.
Okay.
And what that does is it says, I already have the answers. Let me tee those up together to give you the right thing. The problem that is there is if you open up these systems to everything, you're going to find places where it breaks. And so the question is, how do you put appropriate guardrails on this? And you know, something we haven't talked about. So I'm the co-chair of this task force for the Department of Defense on generative AI, trying to figure out like what we should do here. And some of the things that are really fascinating about this right now is the DoD and the government is actually thinking about this in a really sophisticated way. Because what they're asking is like, hey, it's not one size fits all, but certain problems are really great for AI usage. Other problems, no way. Like we cannot even get
like close. What's an example of a no way that you can tell?
Well, so the no ways are making an assessment about something. You could might imagine like targeting systems or weapon systems or things where very clearly the Department of Defense policy right now is there has to be a human in the loop. A human has to be in the loop before you let. Autonomous weapon systems is one of the clear examples. Where now most people think about the Department of Defense and they think weapon systems. They forget that some of the biggest problems actually are like, how do we move fuel, water,
supply chain is a nightmare.
It's like supply chain plus 1,000x of what everyone else is dealing with. And so those problems, much of the algorithms for that were designed in the 1960s. And they haven't really, like, we haven't had major breakthroughs. Now with planning or ideas, you can plan your itinerary for spring break or summer vacation. And my wife even is a heavy user of this, where she's like, look, why should I go to 15 websites that are there in Google or wherever, whatever browser you're using, a search engine you're using? She's like, I'm just going to start here and then say, oh, now this is giving me a list that I'm going to use as a jumping off point.
Yeah.
And she's like, hey, look, okay, this is itinerary. No museums, because one kid's like, I don't want to go to any museum. She's like, plan a whole day only with museums, because the other kid only wants to go to museums. So we're able to like use this as a discussion forum that then allows us to do it. Is the system going to know like, hey, that museum is closed for renovation? No, but it allows me to kind of construct something that I can now then go test and figure out what is right.
I'm just thinking how great the family dinner conversations are. Is there, and hopefully there's no PowerPoint involved when you're putting these family vacation choices up.
So this gets actually, you know, it's funny you say this because, so to give you a sense, so I'm pretty confident my kids are not going to see this. So here's something that's real that shows how hard this is. So my son just got busted for using ChatGPT in school. So he's using, you know, and the question that was there, which shows how poorly we are ready to handle the situation, was they were like, look, you can't use ChatGPT because we're afraid you're going to, you know, plagiarize. No. And he's like, well, but I used it to brainstorm. And they're like, well, that's using it. And he's like, but what if I just use Google to brainstorm?
Exactly.
Why is that allowed? And so really quickly, the 17-year-old blew a hole right through the whole school policy. Because it's kind of the equivalent of like that moment in 2005 or pre-2005 where it was like, is Wikipedia allowed? Or are you only allowed to use Encyclopedia Britannica? And in 2005, the reason this changed is somebody did a comprehensive test and showed Wikipedia and Encyclopedia Britannica were about equal at that point.
Okay, so while we're on it, because I want to flip this over to marketing in a minute, but how is the government really going to regulate or attempt to regulate this business? And even if they want to, can they really get this genie back in the bottle? And, you know, there's all these predictions. There's like a 17% AI is going to destroy the world, which I love that someone is predicting that. But
hopefully they didn't use AI to just create that.
What'd you say?
I said, I hope they didn't use AI to come up with.
Yeah, AI created, there's a 0% chance I'm going to destroy the world.
Right.
But, okay, how's the government going to handle this? And will they really actually be able to do anything?
Yeah, so there's a few movements that are taking place, I think, that everyone listening or watching should pay attention to. That first, at the large scale, we have the nation state scale. We've got a bunch of moving paths. You know, the EU is doing one lane of work. We have the U.S. doing another lane of work, and other countries are trying to think about what's going on. And I'll get back to that in a second. The second layer is you have a whole bunch of states that are talking about regulation. So you have Texas that's doing some stuff. California's got a bunch of proposals on the table. And so we could have even more fragmentation here across the board. And then third is we have to remember that this is an incredibly tough area of national security. So it's kind of like the best version is your best defense is offense.
Right.
And so how do you kind of sprint forward? Because you've got all sorts of kind of national interests at stake. At the federal level, there's kind of two dimensions. The U.S. federal level, there's two dimensions. One is the president has signed executive orders that kind of say, how should regulation, like how should the federal government without legislation actually do things? And that is pointing, that's starting to shift and bend the arc to saying, look, we need to think about trust. We need to think about alignment. How do we actually have verification systems? All a bunch of really good stuff in there. Congress is a little bit stuck and trying to figure out what to do. And we need to be very careful with that, because if you overregulate, you also, you've taken away your ability to
you go on defense and you're on defense by all the other countries that don't take their foot off the offensive gas.
Exactly. Well, this is what's happened with GDPR in Europe, is that you can't actually, a bunch of European countries have basically taken themselves out of the game in AI because you can't use the data effectively. So we have that problem. So it's very fast changing. It's super, it's evolving very quickly. And the other thing is the technology is really focused at today's version of AI. And I can't tell you what the next breakthrough is. Most of us at the transform, when the transformer, this version of what you see as large language models came up, when that first paper showed up, I think most of us were like, okay. And then when we started to realize like, whoa, those are surprising results. What right. is going on? And then, you know, we're just a little over a year ago since ChatGPT, you know, really went open and wide and everyone was like, what? I can do those things? And similarly, we continue to be surprised at some of the special results. And I'll tell you, like one of the ones that's there, healthcare. Like, are we ready to do clinical stuff with AI? You know, where it's actually taking care of you? Not in my opinion, not from the people I talk to or work with. But what we are seeing is a large number of patients who are using AI to actually get insights about what they've been diagnosed with. So they're conversing with it, they're getting value. We are seeing physicians who are asking, how can I break this message or explain this complicated issue in a more emotionally a better way.
A little warmer. Yeah, a little warmer.
A little warm, right? Rather than just like, here's the science. And so that is telling us, that gives you an indication of some of the value areas that we see, while we also have to make sure that the safeguards, because we don't want this hallucination type aspect happening in a clinical setting.
No, it'd be awful. All right, let's write marketers into the story. Is AI here to take your job or improve it? And how do you keep the Terminator from taking your job? You know, I'm just writing all kinds of science fiction movies.
No, it's the question of the day. So here's the number one advice I have for anybody out there right now. If you're not like playing with these systems, you're going to miss out. The equivalent here is like, hey, look, the mobile phone showed up and you're going to ignore it?
Like you're when still the on iPhone showed up phone
and you weren't going to be on the BlackBerry, like you were staying on yeah. their BlackBerry, you were missing out. Like you had to have your BlackBerry, your iPhone, your Palm Pilot. Yeah, you had to start playing to get a sense of where things are going. And same that we saw with the you know, sort of different versions of the web, going from, you know, Web 1.0 to social media to like this new form. Like you have to be playing with it. Two is learning, like, how does these technologies, how can they benefit you as you go forward? Like, where are the limits of this? Like, so for example, image generation, is that good for you in your world? Is it bad for you? What about some of these video elements? Just playing and create, you have to carve out space and time to do this.
And this is, we talked about this a little bit on some earlier shows. It's also, don't delegate this to a person.
That's right.
Like everyone should be playing. But when you are looking at
Mike, let me pause, because you said that's so important. This is so important. If you delegate this is that moment in mobile when it's like, well, I have my mobile guy.
Yeah.
And then everyone who wasn't the mobile guy is out of a job. Like, yeah. You have to be the mobile guy. You have to be the AI person. You have to lead from the front by playing with the scenes. Like, to your point at the beginning, if you're not taking the red pill now,
there we go.
With this amount of technology and seminal shift happening, you're going to get passed over.
Yeah. I think that's really good. And I think the other thing is, if you delegate this to a person or even a small group of people, the rest of the people won't keep up and they won't put it into the company. It will always be viewed as a special thing. So I think that's really important. When you are looking around though, and you're looking at marketing applications, like actually out there and looking at, we had a whole show on vendor management and vendor management of AI. Any best practices you can share with our listeners?
So the biggest one right now is, honestly, don't get locked into any vendor specific thing. It's too early. Like, this is an area where you've got to have flexibility. Any tooling or product area that sort of locks you in and prevents you from migrating, like, what's the migration cost is a primary thing I ask. Because a lot of this technology, a bunch of the early forms of this are likely to get integrated into other things, or they are going to become commodities.
Right. So, they're going to be the entry to play.
Exactly. And here's Zoom's AI thinking I'm giving a thumbs up. Right. So so it just shows like we're in that very early stages. It's almost like that version. We're going to look back and be like, wow, that was how we used to do things, how antiquated and that right. felt.
So when you look at this, what do you recommend or what are you investing in when you look at all the AI potential investments and what, you know, what's your advice on that front?
Yeah, man, NVIDIA.
Yeah. $2 trillion is a really big number.
Exactly. And right now, you know, like a lot of people are trying to figure out how can we build these things, but we have a supply chain constraint world. And the people who make these chips are the ones that determine the success trajectory of companies. The other thing is you have to get your data in order. If you don't get your data in order, none of this stuff works. And too often, especially in marketing world, our layers of data our data is so bad.
We had a show with Sean Peters, who's really big in Publicis on this. And one of the things he said is, don't put AI on a pile of really unintegrated, stupid data, because you'll be even farther behind.
And you don't have visibility
in getting it right.
That's right. Because the biggest issue is when you throw it into this giant AI system, it's very hard to get visibility about what happened. Why did it go wrong? In traditional systems, we can go in and debug it. We could be like, oh, here's where the error happened. Or, oh, look, this data thing was corrupted. Let's go fix that. And then you rerun it and it works. Here, it's like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, you have no idea where it's wrong. And
I have no idea.
It's
exactly.
Like the plumbing puts something out in your tub and you can't see any of the piping.
That's right. So your fidelity of data, if you have a bunch of data that's really high fidelity here and really crappy over here, is it going to be biased to this portion of the data set? Absolutely. And that's no different than our own decision making when meetings happen and someone's like, oh, let me show you all this great data. You naturally gravitate to that.
So I have to call this out for all the marketers, which is, this is a super important point. If you don't really have a good data infrastructure and platform, if you stick AI on top of this, it's going to be such a big problem.
That's right. And most marketers, like, let's be honest, most of the IT systems that have been built, the technology that's been built for marketing is to get around the more traditional infrastructure that we have. That traditional infrastructure, the reason it is so rock solid, expensive, all the things that kind of are a pain with it, is because it's battle hardened to do like the heavy lifting.
Right. To allow you to close the books every month and to do all this. But this does not incorporate like the call center data, the vendor data, a lot of the other, if you don't have this right, you will make a bunch of dumb decisions.
Exactly. Like, it's very easy for things to go off the rails here if you're not
Hey,
careful.
so you gave a graduation speech at Maryland a long time ago in 2013, talking about failure. We don't have time to go into all of it, but just give us the highlights about the relevancy of that failure discussion and what our listeners should take away from that.
Yeah, it's actually such an interesting time because I'm just starting to formulate. I'm super honored to be able to give the one of the commencements at the latest new college, first college in 50 years at Berkeley, the School of Computation, Computer Data Science and Society.
Nice.
So I've been thinking a bunch about this. So the Maryland one was really about the importance of failing fast. And Mike, you and I live this. Like, we're
Yeah.
like, test it, iterate it, go. If it's not working, shift gears. The way I describe it to people is it's not just about velocity, it's about acceleration of learning. For the math people out there, it's about being first derivative positive and second derivative positive. It's the speed at which you're going. And you know, I don't have to tell you about this, but for other people, you know, the version of it is like, we're not going to win on lap one. We're
Yeah.
supposed to win on lap 15 because we get a little bit smarter, we get a little bit better, we get a little bit better. And so we compound. And by the time we get to lap 15, no one can catch us. And so, what is your way in life to fail fast and iterate forward and find environments where, how do you construct environments? So you're like, yeah, this is a fail mode. I'll give a very specific example that may sound totally crazy. So we went to the Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter, and we said, we believe firmly that there needs to be a new paradigm for cybersecurity and to protect ourselves. The way we're going to do that is we are going to invite America to hack the Pentagon.
Yeah.
You can imagine the secretary's response at that point. Now, luckily, we did it on a plane where he couldn't leave or throw us out. But we said, sir, here's how we're going to do it smart. We're going to craft this program. So we're going to call it Hack the Pentagon. But really, you're not hacking the whole Pentagon. You're hacking this one small area that is safe. And by the way, if it turns out that people are like, oh no, you hacked the Pentagon, guess what? All the other nation states have already hacked the Pentagon.
That's right.
So this is a safe way to do it. And when we did this, like, people were hacking the Pentagon, this portion of the Pentagon, in 7 minutes, like
Yeah.
7 minutes. And so we were able to then start like hardening this very quickly and take those lessons to the more sensitive things. So it's a way of saying, we're gonna fit, like, if case we screwed up, but
But
we're gonna
I think
carry it
this is
forward.
so important for marketers. In particular, because a lot of times they're putting out what I'm going to call binary efforts. It's a win or a loss.
The
And
Super Bowl ad is not a fail fast moment.
yes, the Super Bowl, like Super Bowl ad is an excellent example, but there's a lot of examples where it's all or nothing in a marketplace that is too hard to have very much certainty in it. So I think this fail fast and learn as fast as possible lesson is great. So DJ, we're at the end of the show and it's a
Wait, let me
safe.
just say one
Oh,
more thing
okay.
because I'm going to
One
drag it
more
on this.
thing. Here we go.
So, fail fast has to be your mantra in AI because this is such a fast evolving space. I have no idea where we're going to be in a year. I have no idea where we're going to be in 9 months, even
Yeah,
maybe
that's why we're going to
3 months.
have you back in 9 months.
I'm happy to. And so part of this, as you try to think about your failure rate, is you have to get the subsequent teams, your partners in the marketing world, understanding like that we have to go on this journey together. This has to be a we, and we're going to experiment, we're going to try things, and we're going to find safe ways to test things out so that we can learn and then build on it and then eventually get the real returns that we know are coming.
I think this will be when we come back in 9 months, we can also talk about how smaller and medium-sized companies should do this. But as we're at the end of the show, same question as always for every show. You can pick one or both of these, but you have to pick at least one. Funniest story you can share on the air or practical advice we have not yet talked about. Pick one or both.
Oh man, most practical advice.
There we go.
how am I staying on top of AI?
Okay.
You and I grew up pre word processors, pre-cloud,
You're killing me. All right.
So the key is I hang out with really young people who know how to use this tech. And I'm like, hey, how did you do that? And they're like, oh, they roll their eyes. They're like, man, like how does that guy function? And I am watching them and I'm learning through them. So hang out with really young people, your interns, your other people, get out of your office and sit next to them and ask them how they are living and using these systems. And they'll teach you.
And then you can always fight with your high school on the chat GPT rules.
Exactly.
All right. Very good. Thank you, DJ. And thanks to everyone for listening to CMO Confidential. Look for more of our shows on Apple, YouTube, Spotify, and the I Hear Everything Network, including marketing, the battle between believers and non-believers. It was the best of times and it was the worst of times from a top executive search consultant. Why is B2B marketing so bad and what to do about it? Parts 1 and 2. And is the CMO position the hardest job in business? If you are enjoying our show, please like, share, and subscribe. Hey, all you marketers, stay safe out there. This is Mike Linton signing off for CMO Confidential.